Thanks to the organizers for the opportunity to be here today talking about, well, one of our most recent works, namely the work you can find in more detail under this HEPTH number here. And the title of this paper, as well as of my talk, you can see here, Breeders in the Elliptic Sine Gordon Model. As you can also see, this is a work in collaboration with Andreas Fring at the Freie Universität Berlin. And, well, as the title indicates, the main achievement of this work has been the construction of a breeder sector for the elliptic generalization of the Sine Gordon model, which was originally proposed by Samuel Ogikoff already more than 20 years ago. So in that original paper, he constructs, let's say, the soliton-antisoliton sector. And what we have done in our work has been to construct the amplitudes characterizing the interaction of breeder-soliton and breeder-with-breeder. Moreover, we have expressed these amplitudes in a different mathematical way as Samuel Ogikoff did, in the sense that we introduce some new functions which include, in a certain specific way, the elliptic, the dependence on the elliptic parameters. And these new functions are what we call Q-deform gamma functions. So, well, let me go in more detail about this, which is essentially the summary of the main points I'm going to treat in this talk. So first of all, I present you the model in the way Samuel Ogikoff presents it in his paper, the paper I mentioned here. So as I said, this is can be considered an elliptic generalization of the Sine Gordon model in the sense that the trigonometric limit of the theory is indeed the Sine Gordon model. Samuel Ogikoff calls this model also the C4 model because C4 symmetry is present, in the sense that if we characterize the model by the Samuel Ogikoff algebra in this way, so we have generators related to solitons and to antisolitons, C and C bar, just like in the standard Sine Gordon model, then it happens that this algebra here, this Samuel Ogikoff algebra, is invariant under such transformations here. And that's what we understand as a C4 symmetry. So if you observe this Samuel Ogikoff algebra here, you can see, if you are familiar with Sine Gordon, that this algebra just looks exactly like the algebra you have for the Sine Gordon model, except for this term here, which I depict in blue. Namely, we have added here a term which tells us that in the scattering of two solitons, it is possible that the outer state is actually a couple of antisolitons. So that the presence of this term here actually makes a big difference, in the sense that Samuel Ogikoff already found out that the solution for these amplitudes A, B, C, and D is now given instead of, normal trigonometric functions and gamma functions, now is given in terms of elliptic functions, in particular the SM function here. So actually these prefactors here just look exactly like in Sine Gordon if you now take the trigonometric limit. We have again a coupling constant nu, and then we have this extra amplitude D, which you can clearly see here already, that when the parameter L of the characterizing the elliptic functions goes to zero, namely trigonometric limit, then this function goes to zero already also, and then we will recover eventually the Sine Gordon model. Then what is most complicated to solve is actually the equation for this function C, so for this function here, and Samuel Ogikoff already solved this equation in that paper, and he found a solution which he expressed in this particular representation, so in terms of an infinite sum of this form. Here you see several parameters already entering, so this tau is a parameter which is a ratio of the typical periods of the elliptic functions. Here we have this lambda which includes the coupling constant and again the period of the elliptic functions, and this theta hat is a certain normalization of the usual rapidity variable, again in terms of this period and of the coupling constant nu. So, well, these periods are defined as usual for elliptic functions, and as I'm saying, this quantities here characterize period series and poles of elliptic functions, in particular of these SM functions here. And what is usually called the trigonometric limit corresponds to the situation when this L goes to zero. In that limit, what happens is that this period KL becomes pi half, and the other period K1 minus L becomes infinity. And in this form, the function SN goes into the function sine, the usual trigonometric function. So, as I said, all this information I'm giving you here was something which already Samuel Ogikoff found out in this original paper. And what we have done in addition to this work has been, as I said, to provide, well, the breeder sector of this theory. So here you have the amplitudes corresponding to solitons, antisolitons, but we don't have yet the scattering matrices which will eventually describe from the scattering of a soliton with a breeder or or breeders with each other. And it's also not clear in principle if these breeders exist also here, not like in Sine Gordon. In addition, you have here this solution for this function t in terms of this infinite sum representation. And something which we have done also is to solve again for this function and express the solution in a slightly different way. This is useful in the sense that it makes more intuitive how to take certain limits, because what we have done is to express this function t as a certain infinite product of what we call q-deform gamma functions, namely functions which in the trigonometric limit become gamma functions, and therefore it's more clear to see how this really goes into the Sine-Gordon model. So if we write it a little bit more formal, what I just said, then what we have for the usual situation we encounter in the case of non-diagonal theories, integral models, is what you see here. So that happens, for instance, for Sine-Gordon. That's the most known example. So what happens usually when we have backscattering is that the scattering amplitudes have a generic form of this type. So there is a function f, which is generically a combination ratios of trigonometric functions. And then there are some infinite products here of gamma functions. And the parameters entering these gamma functions here, which are different for every theory, are restricted in this form, which guarantees the convergence of this product here. Well, so how do we kind of generalize this when we have an elliptic model? Well, the rough idea is that now, where we have numbers, we will have q-deform numbers. Where we have gamma functions, we will have q-deform gamma functions. And where we have trigonometric functions, we will have elliptic functions. That's a very rough description, but that's essentially what happens in the end. So, well, what's the q-deformation? The q-deformation will play the role here of including precisely the dependence on the elliptic parameters, namely the elliptic periods, kl, k1 minus l. So in the case, or in this problem, in concrete, for Sine-Gordon model, which q-deformation parameters are of interest in this case? Well, actually, the q-deformation parameter which will be most important in our case is this q-hat here. And this parameter q-hat depends on this tau, and this tau is a certain ratio of these periods. Why is this parameter better than this other one here? Well, because usually, when we talk about q-deformations, usually we think that when we take a certain deformation parameter q to 1, then we recover somehow the classical limit or the trigonometric limit in our case. So precisely when L goes to 0, trigonometric limit, then it happens that this parameter here goes to 1, whereas the parameter q here will go to infinity, since k1 minus L goes to infinity. So this parameter q goes to 1 such that such limit here, the trigonometric limit, well, there is this equivalent, no? Equivalency. When L goes to 0, q goes to 1, so we have such limit. And what is a q-deform gamma function? Well, a q-deform gamma function will be a function which generalizes the infinite product representation of the standard gamma function. So one of the multiple possible representations one has for a gamma function is a representation which looks like this, where instead of these q-deform numbers I'm having now here, one has common numbers. This will be the gamma function, and if we want to q-deform, to define a q-deformation of this gamma function, then we can just replace these numbers by q-deform numbers defined in the standard way. And this is what we call q-deform gamma function, and obviously, per definition, this property is satisfied. Namely, when L goes to 0, q goes to 1, then we have the gamma function. Okay, so these are the new quantities we introduced here. And now what we did in our work, which is quite a tedious calculation, is to compute, first of all, the amplitudes homologic of Hast in terms of these functions. Before I show that, I just show you some properties. Of course, you are not supposed to remember that, but it's just interesting that you see there are lots of identities one can exploit for this function, and which are of a great use when one eventually wants to take trigonometric limits or other types of limits we have analyzed also. Of special interest, for instance, is this property here, which is relating the standard SM function to q-deform gamma functions, and one can even relate that to both types of q-deformation, depending on the limits one wants to take afterwards. All properties are here. For instance, this property here is very intuitive in the sense that you can very clearly see how that goes in the trigonometric limit. So when Q goes to 1, this property is just the typical property. Gamma of x plus 1 is x gamma of x, now generalized to the Q-diffeom gamma function. And these other properties here are just consequences of that one, actually. Also of interest is, for instance, this property here, which relates Q-diffeom functions to Q-squared diffeom functions, and which will be later on used. Anyway, it's just to show you that, well, that there are lots of properties which are of interest, which we have analyzed and which we have eventually used to get the results I will just present now without many details. And so, once I introduce this function, then what we do is to start again a bit and to solve the equations which one day Zamboludikov solved for these functions A, B, C, D. But now, instead of having this function C, I was showing at the beginning in terms of an infinite sum representation he computed, we have now this function expressed in terms of an infinite product of these Q-diffeom gamma functions. And if you think of a trigonometric limit, as I said, such a function reminds you more now of what the Sine-Gordon model is, namely some model where the scattering matrices involve infinite products of gamma functions. One can, well, use some of these properties, in particular the ones which relate Q deformations to Q squared deformations, to express now the amplitude A in this form as an infinite product of these functions. And this prefactor is again, a function of Q deform gamma functions. And, well, comments are interesting here. First of all, once more, that we recover Sine-Gordon in the trigonometric limit. That's an exercise one can do to see that actually this A here is in the trigonometric limit, the one of Sine-Gordon. And also it's of interest to say that this function C I'm presenting here is actually not the unique solution one gets when one tries to solve these equations, but actually is the one which is producing the right trigonometric limit and at the same time has the right polar structure one wants. Okay, then, talking about polar structure, how do we analyze the polar structure of these amplitudes? Of course, that's a very interesting analysis because eventually we want to check, for instance, if the necessary poles are present so that we can think of the existence of a Bredel sector, like in the Sine-Gordon model. So the way we analyze these poles is just, well, analyzing individually the poles and zeros which are present in these Q-diffeom functions. And the interesting properties we exploit are those here. So the poles of the Q-diffeom gamma function are given in this way. So actually, that's a function which has no zeros and has poles at these points. This tau here is this parameter I was using all the time, so ratio of the periods of the elliptic functions. And as it's well known, the poles and the zeros of the SM function are given by these expressions here in terms of these numbers, which are, well, integer numbers. Okay, so knowing these properties, namely where the poles and zeros are located, then we can analyze in detail the polar structure of this amplitude A in the elliptic case. And from such analysis, what comes out is this picture I'm showing you here. So this, what is depicted here is actually the poles of the amplitude A of theta, which by crosses is related to B, for, well, some particular choices of the parameter L and of the coupling constant of the model. Well, first of all, you see here some poles and here some poles which are not of interest because are completely outside the physical sheet, so they are not interesting to analyze. Then here you see some very special poles lying right in the imaginary axis in the physical sheet, so that actually are the poles which we want to relate, or we will relate eventually to the Bredel states, so to bound states. And here, well, you have many other poles which we call tachyons because, well, they are poles which in principle, or normally in integrable models, we don't have. So, poles which we cannot interpret, or which will be related to particles of negative mass in principle. I think that's how you, well, because there is a real and imaginary part for these poles, and if you will use Bray-Wigner for those poles, then you will get, I think, a negative mass for these particles.
Bray-Wigner is the S term.
Sorry?
Bray-Wigner.
Yeah, okay. It's not, of course. Of course, I mean, of course, the poles which you can really interpret with Bray-Wigner as unstable particles are the ones here. But somehow, if you will extrapolate its use, you will get kind of particles of negative mass. Well, things which, in summary, you cannot, in principle, interpret. So these poles are there. in here, so in both sides. And then you have also some extra poles in this sheet, which you call, well, which you can relate to unstable particles, and which Samolodikov already mentioned, their existence. So, well, talking about these poles, actually, what happens in the analysis of Samolodikov is that precisely because these poles are here present, he chooses the coupling constant or the parameters of the model in this way. So he imposes this constraint. And what this constraint does is precisely to avoid that these poles are here, but which is in principle good, because as I said, we don't have in principle an explanation for them. But of course, when you impose that, then automatically you have also no breeders. So you just have the soliton anti-soliton sector. And that means that in his work, when he takes the trigonometric limit, actually the only thing he can recover from the Sine-Gordon model is the soliton anti-soliton sector. There is not a breeder sector related to that theory. So because of that, we thought it's of interest, although, as I said, these poles are in principle not allowing an interpretation, we think it's interesting, well, to try to actually carry out a bootstrap in these poles here for the breeders, forget for a while that these poles are here, and see if one actually can close this bootstrap, if one can construct something which actually gives in the trigonometric limit the breeder sector, and actually, as we will see, there are other interesting limits we will be able to study once we construct these amplitudes. So,
but all of real part usually is spoiled and causality of the
system. Yeah, as I said, they are poles which you don't desire. Yeah. We are not making sense of them. I'm just saying that if you now try to think, well, these breeders are here, and to do a bootstrap for these breeders and to construct amplitudes corresponding to those breeders there, forgetting about these undesired poles, then you actually find a bootstrap which closes. And you have amplitudes given in terms of these elliptic functions now, whose trigonometric limit is actually given Sine-Gordon. So that's the only way you have really a complete elliptic generalization of Sine-Gordon. But you cannot get rid of those poles, that's true. So the question is,
with the restriction,
but then you don't have any breeder sector, so that's a bad thing. And you cannot study the other nice limits, which I will explain now. So let me go to our results. So okay, so let's try to give an interpretation to those poles here in terms of breeders. And well, if we do that, then we have a similar situation as in the standard Sine-Gordon model, namely that we can label those breeders by an integer n, which is restricted by a maximum value, which is the integer part of this number here. So you see, in the trigonometric limit, when k goes to pi half, that's precisely the condition you have for the Sine-Gordon model. Okay, so let me quickly explain you how one can construct actually these amplitudes for the breeder sector. So the technique we use for that is actually a very old technique, which was already used many years ago in the original papers for the Sine-Gordon model by Karoski and Thum. Namely, what one does here is, let's make the assumption that one can describe these breeders, if they are there, in a similar way as they are described in the Sine-Gordon model. And so we do it as it was there. It was done in these papers there. And what the authors did there was to take somehow the classical picture, which where a breeder is some bound state of a soliton and anti-soliton, and with a certain parity, and to represent then a breeder state in such a way. So that's how Karofsky and Thum were computing, for instance, this breeder soliton, breeder amplitudes in their original work. So we can formally represent the breeder state in this way in terms of this Samolodikov operators for solitons and anti-solitons. And eventually, when we take this on shell, then we have a state here which we call the breeder N. Once we have this representation, of course, we can then try to commute with the soliton state. And from those commutation relations come out eventually these scattering matrices. And that's quite a tedious work, which one can do. And what one finds, so in short here, is this kind of thing. So actually, one can commute these operators here, and one finds that, that this process is actually diagonal, so like in the Sine-Gordon model. So we have here the scattering amplitude of the breeder and the soliton. And, the fact that it is diagonal follows from the fact that actually when you go on shell, these amplitudes here in red actually become zero. You can show that these quantities here are zero, and that the amplitudes in blue actually are equal to each other up to a factor minus one to the n, so that you recover here on this side again the Bredo state, but on the other side of the soliton. So that's diagonal. How do these amplitudes look like now in terms of our elliptic functions? Well, they just look like this here. So, well, you have now, of course, all this combination of Q-deform gamma functions, and here you have infinite product of Q-deform numbers. So from this formulation here, and with the use of some properties, one can very easily see that in the trigonometric limit, this gives us exactly, well, the soliton Bredo scattering amplitude you have in the Sine-Gordon model, quite a non-trivial result. And here, once more, you have different types of poles. Of course, you have now double poles, which we call of tachyonic nature, so these poles which have to do with these other poles, which were already present there at the beginning, which you cannot explain in principle. Then you have double poles, which you can explain by Coleman tube mechanism. Then you have poles in the non-physical sheet related to unstable particles, as Zamolodnikov already had noticed. And then you have simple poles in the imaginary axis, which you can relate to the formation of the nth Bredo soliton bound state. As I said, you can take the trigonometric limit of this expression here, and actually by using this property here, you can easily see that this infinite product goes now into a finite product of sine functions, such as it corresponds to the Sine-Gordon model. Also, you can see that these functions here are going to 1 in any case. In a very similar way, although it is even more tedious, this calculation, you can compute the corresponding scattering amplitude for a couple of Bredos, n and m, and you can find out that similarly as it occurs for the standard Sine-Gordon model, again, this process is diagonal, and when you take these rapidities on shell, namely by choosing them in a specific way, like this, then you eventually recover this expression for the scattering amplitude Bredo-Bredo, and again here you have all this part given in terms of these Q-deform numbers, which eventually will produce in the trigonometric limit the product of tangents you have for the Sine-Gordon model. So until here, we constructed these amplitudes, and I was repeating all the time that one gets eventually the right trigonometric limit, namely the Sine-Gordon theory. So we can say already that in this work, we really constructed a complete generalization to the elliptic case of this theory, including the soliton, antisoliton, and the Bredo sector. That's already per se non-trivial, but actually there are other interesting limits one can also study, apart from the pure trigonometric limit, which will be this line here. So namely, if you start with our elliptic Sine-Gordon model, you take this parameter to zero, then you get Sine-Gordon. That's what I was saying all the time. But actually, there is something else you can do, namely to choose the coupling constant in this very special form. When you do that, actually, this model becomes diagonal, namely the non-diagonal amplitudes vanish, and then you have a model which we can interpret as an elliptic generalization of Dn affine to the theory. We can interpret it like this because when you now take, again, the trigonometric limit of this model, L going to zero, with this integer here going being zero too, then this theory goes into the minimal Dn affine to the theory. The same limit you have here, you get actually from taking the inverse of the coupling constant in Sine-Gordon to be an integer. So that's a limit which is known, and you can go to this limit also in this other way. You can also get a free theory, for instance, if you go with the inverse of the coupling in Sine-Gordon to I infinity, or from here if you make m being different from zero and take the trigonometric limit of these expressions here. So we think it's also a very nice result, which we have found new, yeah, almost them. The fact that we actually here recover as a specific limit of our theory newly constructed an elliptic generalization of the Dn affine to the theory. Well, as I said, I mean, if you just go from here to here, the only thing you know is that you're getting a diagonal theory, because what happens in this specific case is that this C's and this are going to zero. So you have an amplitude, the amplitudes A and B are related to each other like this in that limit. If you just do this step, in principle, you don't know that this has anything to do with Dn. But the reason why you call it like this is that if you now take the trigonometric limit of this theory, you actually recover Dn affine to order, minimal Dn affine to order. So it is, I think, logical to think that this is at least one of the possible elliptic generalizations of this model, because, well, it's a theory depending on elliptic functions whose trigonometric limit gives us minimal Dn to order, which is also coming from this other limit from here. So in this sense, it's an elliptic generalization because it has a trigonometric limit, minimal dn. This you can see here in more detail. Actually, this diagonal limit, this amplitude looks like this. And if one now takes extra, as an extra limit, the diagonal limit of that expression, then essentially Q deformed numbers become numbers, and one can use some well-known properties for the Sinch functions to show that this actually gives this product. So the typical scattering matrix of the DN affine sort of theory. And furthermore, one can, as I said, take the limit in which this theory becomes actually not a free fermion, but a free theory. So that becomes one. So I'll just finish by reading the conclusions. So repeating once more the main achievements of this work. So the conclusions are the following. We have proposed an alternative formulation for the scattering amplitudes of the C4 model, elliptic version of the Sine-Gordon model of Samolodnikov. And our proposal can be very roughly summarized as follows. If you have a theory with backscattering and you want to construct its elliptic generalization, then you replace numbers by Q-deformed numbers, gamma functions by Q-deformed gamma functions, and trigonometric functions by elliptic functions. That's the rough picture, how that seems to work. Well, I think this formulation we propose, then we see that if we relax the constraint originally imposed by Samolodnikov in its work, such that one can have also pools in the physical sheet related to breeders, then one can construct a consistent breeder sector for this model. Consistent in the sense that one has as many breeders as this constraint tells us here, and these breeders actually can be shown, or these amplitudes can be shown to, one can show that they satisfy the corresponding bootstrap equations related to these bound states. So, well, they satisfy all the nice properties one has in general for bound states. And also, apart from the fact that the trigonometric limit of this theory is Sine-Gordon, as we expect, there are other possible limits one can study. And especially interesting, we think, is that as a special limit of this theory, one recovers a certain elliptic generalization of the n affine to the theory. That's all. Thank you very much.